this week on the podcast, a game that inspired Scottish composer James McMillan to compile a piece called The Berserker.
The Pole scores against the Yugoslavs and the Scots go mad. And it's gone in for Walker! This is unbelievable stuff!
The Fun House.
So for Celtic fans of a certain age, this week's game is probably, even now, and I'm now in my 51st year, one of the most remarkable European games that I have ever been at. And for people of our age, they will agree. We had the previous week, or the previous fortnight, I should say, gone abroad in this Cup Winners' Cup game, and we got what at the time would have been seen as a credible 2-1 away defeat. We got the away goal, we'd gone away 2-1, and then we came back to Celtic Park with hope of getting a result, and played a game on the 27th of September 1989 that will long go in everybody's memory. So I'm joined this week, or Anthony and I are joined this week by Lawrence Donegan to talk about the Celtic 5 Partizan Belgrade 4. How you doing, Lawrence?
I had no idea you were at the game. I never saw you.
I was wearing the green and white hoop top.
where were you? Were you in the director's box as usual?
Right. I was in the Celtic end. I was middle of the Celtic end, middle back of the Celtic end. So where were you? Tell us where were you at the game?
I was, well, I guess I shouldn't be saying this, but at the time we called it the Rangers end. And that's where I was. It was very, very unusual. I never went in it. That place was, I mean, I know it's Celtic Park. I would never set foot in that dump. I think that might have been the one and only time I was in that end of the ground, when it was the old ground.
See, that was the thing. Back then, we used to call it the Celtic end and the Rangers end.
Yeah.
There was the Celtic end, the jungle, the stand and the Rangers end. And I was in it a reasonable number of times, but I mean, not massively. That was just post all the casual stuff. So in the preceding sort of 4 or 5 years, if you were in the Rangers end, you might have come out and met opposite Aberdeen, Hibs, Hearts, not Rangers, but Aberdeen, Hibs, Hearts fans on the other side of that. And it wasn't the best place to be.
It was a couple of things, actually, when thinking about it. The game was all ticket. Was the game all ticket? I thought I'd rolled up and just got in, but I think I read somewhere it was all ticket.
Well, there was, I mean, for the time, it was a huge attendance because it was 50,000 people.
Yeah, that
there.
Again, my memory of it was it, well, it was busy, obviously, but at the time, I'm thinking there's quite a lot of space because I went to all the games. I was in the jungle. I mean, it was just, you know, it was like sardines in there. But going to that particular game, so anyway, there's a long, convoluted story of why I was at that game, because I wasn't living in Glasgow at that point. So
tell us all about your life at this time. Tell us what you were doing.
Ah, this is great stuff. So 1989, so I was in the band Loy Coldly Commotions, for anybody who hasn't been bored to death by our podcast. And but I decided I'd had enough. I'm going to go and be a journalist. So when I was in the band, I'd be writing reviews for the New Musical Express. And
did you do them under your own name?
I did. The first review I ever did was of Elvis Costello and the Attractions at the Roskilde Festival in Denmark. And we were second on the bill to Elvis. So I fancied myself as a bit of a writer. And so anyway, I submitted this review, which was terrible. But I knew a guy at the New Musical Express, a great guy called Alan Jackson, who ended up working at the Times. And he kind of basically rewrote it, stuck it in, and put my name on it. And that was it. I was off and running. But mostly I wrote them for Record Mirror, the great long-gone Record Mirror, under the name of Harry Mercer. just like Harry Brady.
Exactly, yeah. So, an excellent nom de plume, isn't it?
To cut a long story short, I went, we played at Wembley Arena on one Sunday night, and about two Sundays later, I was travelling up to Newcastle to start at journalism school. I was at journalism school from the tail end of 88 through into 89, and I got my first job at the Northern Echo, which is in Darlington. It was a great newspaper, still is a good newspaper, good local newspaper. And so I hadn't been, because I'd been living in London, so I hadn't seen many Celtic games. But there was a boy on the news desk, a guy called Ian Cross, who was a mad keen Newcastle fan. And I said, never, don't give me that St. James's Park crap. I'll take you to a Celtic game. And that was the game we chose. And it's, and to be honest, my memory of the journey up is much more vivid than my memory of the game. You know, we drove up. I just passed my driving test. That was a terrible drive. Almost killed us twice. I'd got a new, it was a red Golf, Volkswagen Golf, and I drove us up. And we drove up from Newcastle. Beautiful drive, actually, up the East Coast. And we stopped at Loughness or somewhere around here, one of those long Nidri for roll and ham, a couple of rolls and ham. And then we rolled into Scotland and rolled up to Glasgow, got tickets for the game. I think we must have bought tickets on the night. And we'll obviously go over the whole thing, mate, but I was just so proud. I was so proud. I'd gone on to this guy for months and he'd saw good. I was actually more of a Sunderland fan living down there in the Northeast. And, but I was so proud. I'd been going on for months about Celtic and Celtic Park and how much it was amazing. And I took him and the guy was stunned. He just couldn't believe it. The greatest football game he'd ever seen in his life up to that point. And I swear to God, I'm sure it's the greatest football game he's ever seen in his whole life. Being a Newcastle fan, obviously. But I mentioned to you, go on.
No, I was just going to say, but it was an amazing atmosphere because there was so many times we were out and we were back in. And then we were out and then we were back in. And I remember going shortly after that game, we played Hibs at Celtic Park and we beat Hibs 3-1. And guy next to me was going crazy. I think it was actually the next home game that we played after this game, and the guy next to me is going crazy. I remember standing there thinking, how can you get excited? If you've been at the Partizan game, how can you get excited about beating Hibs in an average league game? It was just...
You're absolutely right. See, before I forget, and I mentioned to you before when we set this up, just a quick couple of things people might get fun out of. When I went to gave up the band and I went to journalism school, in my class was a guy called Michael Gove.
Yeah.
The Michael Gove. And there was this other guy, interesting guy, a guy called Paul McMullen, who was a really sleazy kind of guy, you know. And I better be careful, actually. But anyway, it turned out when the whole phone hacking scandal broke, the guy in the middle of it who'd been doing all the dirty work for the News of the World, was Paul McMullen. So we had these two incredible characters in our journalism class. I get into trouble all the time about sticking up for Michael Gove. I don't stick. His politics are atrocious. His politics are always atrocious. But see, at the time, he's a great guy. I'm going to get slaughtered now, aren't I? This is the end of this podcast. I'll never be invited back on. We used to go up to down the big market in Newcastle on a Friday night. He'd be wearing his kilt. Campus Christmas, by the way. And he just used to get hammered. We used to get hammered. It was brilliant. Anyway.
But I was going to say, but actually, I mean, this is the thing sometimes that you'll know this. If you get to know someone, you can detach who they are as a political person from who they are as a different person, because they're not talking politics every second of their life. No. They are now because that's their job and that's what they're doing. And I'm not defending Michael Gove or whatever, but I can understand why in that environment, it's a different person that you're dealing with.
Totally. It was like hanging out with just the best comedian. I mean, obviously, Anthony's here, right? But, I mean, this guy Gold was a proper comedian. He was brilliantly funny. Very smart guy, obviously. Kind of lost his way politically, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, people get more extreme sometimes as they get older. So you went in and and, you know, a guy from Newcastle,
yeah,
and the atmosphere's pretty fervent. So I take it you're then standing going, well, I'm normally over in the jungle over there, and that's where the real fans are and everything. So must have been quite an event.
Yeah. It was, because, well, back then, you know, it was, I had no idea. Actually, I've been listening to the shows have been good, actually, although they all seem to be from the same period.
Oh, no, I've got a guest on, or they're waiting on approval to come on, who's going to be able to give a very excellent insight into the Tom Rogic, the winning the treble, the invincible treble game.
Really?
Yeah, they're just waiting for authorization from the club that they can come on and talk about it.
No, it's not going to be Tom Rogic. No chance.
No, it's not a player. It's not a player. But it's somebody in the club. Because they'll get an insight as to what it was like in the club at that time. So
as I say, I'd moved to London. And then I'd moved up to Newcastle. And I was a district reporter for Bishop Auckland, believe it or not. Can you believe that? And Tony Blair was my local MP. And he was at Sedgefield. And so I hadn't been going to Celtic games. You know, I hadn't been going for a couple of years, really. And I'd adopted Sunderland. My mate in the flat, I lived in this flat, a guy called Ian Whittle, was a Sunderland reporter for the Evening Chronicle in Newcastle. So I'd been going to Sunderland games. Actually, I digress. One of the Sunderland games that I went to, it was a playoff, championship playoff, Sunderland against Newcastle. And it was like in a monsoon in Newcastle one night, and Sunderland beat Newcastle 2-0. Eric Gates scored twice, and it was pissing rain. And we spent the whole night cheering and singing the red flag, because that was what the Sunderland... And that was one of my all-time favourite football memories, and certainly one that's not involved in Celtic. And Jonathan Wilson, the football writer, who's a mad keen Sunderland fan, he wasn't at that game. He can't believe that. I still tell him, I say, I was at that game. And he wasn't at that game. So I'd never been to Celtic. I was going to Sunderland games. So that was such a big deal going back home. And as I say, what overwhelming was just pride, because it was like Celtic had delivered for me. Like, the atmosphere was amazing. The crowd was buzzing. We actually played, looking back, I watched it today. There's 45 minutes of highlights, game highlights on YouTube. It was a great game. Celtic played, Mike Galloway was immense. He was immense that night. Even Andy Walker was good. My overwhelming sense was of pride that I'd brought my mate up from Newcastle and we had delivered. It was awesome.
So, Anthony, I'll let the listeners into a little secret. I didn't organise this properly. And so, Anthony, how's your 3 minutes of prep going?
Oh, outstanding. Outstanding. The game, although I was very young when the game was played, it was obviously such a classic game that it was immediately included in, you know, highlights videos. So all the 1990s Celtic highlight videos that were put out in 93, 94 and beyond would always include this game, you know, like the Celtic A to Z and stuff like that. So it's a game that, you know, has always been in the memory, although I don't remember it at the time. I'm sure my brother and dad were probably at it. But it is an absolute epic. And I remember even when watching the highlights in the Celtic video years ago, one of the things that jumps out is the fact that it was on the British TV. And it's, yeah, to hear John Moxon commentating on a Celtic game is really quite cool. You know, for someone, I quite liked John Moxon as a commentator. And just his yell of, "It's the Pole again!" is just brilliant. To hear John Moxon getting excited about Celtic players. So that stands out, obviously. I reached out to a Serbian friend because I thought this game, you know, might have some historical reverence to Serbs. What I misjudged was how Celtic and Rangers, Red Star and Partizan fans are. Right. So when I asked my friend, "Oh, do you remember that game?" He was like, "Yeah, yeah." And I was like, do you want to tell me something about it?" He was like, "Well, a year and a half later, Red Star Belgrade won the Champions Cup." That is magnificently petty, and it doesn't help this podcast, but at least we're all the same. We learn something about ourselves as football fans. A lot of these guys were rated as good players in Serbia, you know, a lot of internationals. The other funny aside, which, you know, again, it brings us closer to the Serbs, is, you know, when Celtic fans bask in the fact that when Rangers won their European trophy, you know, people quickly qualify it with, they didn't actually even win the cup to qualify for the Cup Winners' Cup that they won. And yeah. My friend was quick to point out that the Partizan had no place in this tournament. But Hajduk Split had been given a 2-year ban from European football for some jiggery pokery. So Partizan were there, like Rangers in the early 70s, undeserving Cup Winners' Cup enterers. So there's a little bit of background knowledge from Serbia.
Can I ask you, it was obviously chaos because the first leg was played in Mostar because there'd been trouble at some European game at Partizan Belgrade the previous season. And They moved it to Mostar. If you look at the videos of the... I just watched I've never seen a worse pitch in my whole life at any level. I mean, they should have taken it next door and put it on a glazed pitch. I mean, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, obviously, Serbian football around this time must have been absolute mayhem.
Well, yeah, it's so surreal, isn't it? Because they were actually really good.
Yeah.
You know, the Yugoslavs were peaking as a football nation. They'd won the World Under 21s or something in like 89 or 88. They had this generation of superstars that was coming through. And then, you know, tragically, it all fell apart.
Well, I suppose they're, what, six to 12 months away from the start of a horrendous civil war over there. So I suppose there would have been issues and ill feeling going through everything in the country at the time. Anything else on the world that was going on at the time, Anthony, that you managed to glean in the last 5 minutes?
It really is the quietest day in history. There's nothing happens that day. So I'm sure our listeners will appreciate our poetic license with stretching the parameters to the month. For sports fans, it's a busy month. There's a Ryder Cup, a 14-14 draw at the Belfry.
Oh, that's right, yeah. That's right.
Boris Becker wins his only US Open against Czech Ivan Lendl in the final.
Oh,
TV show.
I play golf with Ivan Lendl, believe it or not. Good player.
You have played?
I have played with Ivan Lendl.
Do you know, I nearly said earlier when we were Elvis Costello. It was Wembley Arena.
I sound like a total fud. Sorry, Anthony, I interrupted you.
How many name dropping?
I know.
In one podcast. Yes. Oh, Ivan Lendl. Oh, yes. I play golf with Ivan Lendl.
Great guy.
He's a great guy. He's a great. Anyway. Sorry. Go on.
Obviously, you know, last week I leaned into the movies that came out. There's really no movies. It's September. You know, the blockbusters have been and gone in the summer. The awards, you know, season is later on or earlier on in the year. So there's nothing coming out. But I did pivot over to TV. Saw some good stuff. Listeners will all be aware of Doogie Howser, MD, the famous American sitcom about a young doctor. And there's no way Lawrence doesn't remember this. Baywatch came out. And I'm sure you were his biggest fan. Tell me, who did you know from the Baywatch? How many rounds of golf have you played with David Hasselhoff?
I swear to God, hand on heart, I have never watched an episode of Baywatch. I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I know what the premise is, but is it, you know, are the people getting rescued from the ocean every week, or is it a detective show? I have no idea. I've never watched it.
You know, ask David Hasselhoff.
Protest too much.
I mean, I just know it's kind of wank material. That's
did you do any gig reviews of The Hoff?
The Hoff? No, never saw The Hoff anywhere. No, I didn't realise. But you are right. I think the one movie I noticed was Sex, Lies and Videotapes. Brian, is it Sex, Lies and Videotape?
Yeah.
Soderbergh. Brian, you're a big Soderbergh fan. You must have.
No,
sorry, Harry.
that was one of those stereotypical, when I would have been 19 at the time, when you're 19, it's like, oh, that's, you know, the end film that's on at the GFT. It's maybe not, it's quite so white. You go watch at the GFT and you come out, and that was shit. I have no idea why everybody was saying it was great. It was rubbish. Although I was slated today for saying the charts were rubbish in 1991.
They certainly were that week. What about this week? What have we got, Lawrence? What's in the charts this
week? Well, I didn't, it was terrible. So number one in America was Milli Vanilli, Girl I Know It's True. Remember Milli Vanilli?
Oh, Anthony won't remember. Who faked?
It was a good story, actually. They were two German brothers or something, a dreadlock, good-looking guys and all that. But it turned out, you know, it was a huge scandal at the time that they hadn't sung in their own songs. I mean, what? I mean, if you were in the music industry, you know, I'll give you a confession. You know, there was a couple of Lloyd Cohen Commotion songs, and I was a terrible musician, and the producer kicked me out and brought in another bass player. I mean, that was common practice in the music industry. Is you know,
yeah, but it's a bit of a difference in the bass player who's just kind of getting up to speed quickly for the studio time, and two guys who are put front and centre and are on MTV and everywhere across the world that are singing the songs, and it's a German producer singing the songs in the background.
It was, but I was about to say that, you're right, it was of another level, but it was a massive international scandal.
Was this common practice in the music industry, or common practice in bands that you were in?
Yeah, really bad. So a number
also,
one was...
Other people write these golf reports as well, don't they?
I did write this down, but the British charts, the number one was... I couldn't even remember the song. It was one of these jazzies. No, it wasn't. I can't remember. It was crap. Utter crap. It was one of these one-hit wonder jobs. But funny, if you type it in, you can find a top 100 UK of that week. And I went through and I was just looking for the things that we'd be interested in would be Delamitri came in with a bullet, number 92, Stone Cold Sober. Remember that song?
Yeah.
An anchor. That I would imagine being in I could imagine when they get, because you would have got the news of the chart the night before or something, and that would just have been a real boot to the boss. 92. The other one, I couldn't even remember this. Thank God. Hue and Cry, Sweet Invisibility, number 63. Do you remember that song?
I do remember it, but was that not just as their you know, sort of 87 to start of 89, and then it just disappears?
Well, they were number one in the FUD chart, that's for sure.
You're not a big Pat Kane fan, are you?
Not really. Hey, how about this one? Andy, you must have heard. I feel, do you remember Sweet Surrender, Wet, Wet, Wet?
I do remember.
Yeah.
Number 14. I think they were at the peak. That was post, what was the number one hit? There was like number one for about 28 weeks or something. What was it?
That was later on. That was the film, the Hugh Grant film, Four Weddings. And that was Wet, Wet, Wet's renaissance, wasn't it? That was them coming back. So this is still first phase.
Was it?
Wet, 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 it must be.
Yeah, it was first phase of all the Now, here's a question for you. I know to digress on this, but for my memory is there was a sort of Scottish bands kicking about, and then there was a real, just as you were breaking up from Lloyd Cole, there was a real surge of Scottish music round about sort of 87 through to 89. There was a real, everybody, you know, Deacon Blue, Hue and Cry, not that you like them, Delamitri, Goodbye Mr. McKenzie. There was a real raft of stuff. Did you feel like the granddad to all these people? I don't mean that in a patronizing way.
I was 27 years old. Granddad.
No, but did you feel like sort of fatherly to them? Because you'd been through the business and they were all this Glasgow stuff in particular.
You obviously don't know how these things work, Harry. I hated it, you know. Number 14, bastards. God, I wish it'd been number, you know, I wish it'd been number 92 at Delamitri. That's it. No. But from my perspective, the bands are the, you know, even after, so the main bands were Orange Juice, Asdic Camera. They were the gold standard. And then you know, everything after that was kind of downhill, even if it's, you know, I include going to commotions in that, you know. And then by the time you get to the end of the 80s and into the 90s, you're into the dregs, you know, hue and cry, wet, wet. I mean, just terrible, you know. I exclude Delamitri because they were like, Justin's a great songwriter and they were great guys. And Deacon Blue, I was never a huge fan of Deacon Blue, but they were great guys, really nice people. So you were kind of, you weren't that offended when they did well, but some you really didn't like it when, you know. Plus, wait, we're all Rangers fans. Marty Pelo was a Rangers fan, died in the Wuhan.
Tell me, was you, so I used to play cricket with you and Verno, right? Was you telling me a lie once when I was talking to him once about playing in a gig where you're huge in Glasgow or Scotland or even the UK, and then you go to Belgium, you know, as part of some European tour where, you know, for whatever reason you're not big in Belgium, and you've got a half decent place that can maybe take 400 or 500 people, and 14 people are there.
Oh,
I remember you and saying, no, that actually is quite good fun. Could you just get them up on stage and play? And I was never sure whether he was telling me the truth or not.
It's true. I'll tell you two quick stories. One, I did a book tour in America once for one of my books, and I turned up at the Tattered Cover in Denver. Brilliant. One of the greatest bookshops in the world. There was one person there. One person. So, and she was from Glasgow.
Is that For I Am For The Soul?
No, it wasn't. It was an American book. But we played, I can't remember, it was Delamitri were our support act in a European tour. We weren't that big, whatever. And the final show, we were on the road for weeks, and the final show was in Munich. I can, again, of all the places we'd been and seen and done and all this, my most vivid memory, on stage, there's 200 people there. Not, I mean, you could, you know, it was echoing around. We'd been on, everybody on stage at the end, Delamitri, Loico and the Commotions, roadies, managers, girlfriends, everybody on stage, 26-minute version of Purple Rain. And, we emptied the place. Absolutely emptied the place because we didn't give a flying fuck. because there was nobody there and we were all knackered. So yeah, it happened all the time. I mean, you get paid up front, so you're not, you don't know how this works. You get, you know, it doesn't matter if there's one person there or, you know, 2,000 people there. You got paid. So yeah, Ewan's not lying.
Right.
But by the way, they would have never kicked Ewan Vernal out of a recording session. He was a great musician. Still is. He was a great bass player. Much better than me.
Yeah, my first indication of how good he was after Deacon Blue had split up and he went, George Benson came on a tour of Britain and they had Ewan as his, he had Ewan as his bass player.
There you go.
So, yeah. So anyway, you get any name dropping you want to do on this podcast, Anthony?
I'll walk past Ivan Golach once in the street. You know, that's not true.
You watch the highlights of the game. He was they reference him, and you know, he's 19 years old, and he's screaming. I mean, he's basically the leader of the team. The way he's sort of conducting it, he was screaming at the goalie for doing this, that, and the next thing. The goalie's trying to get time wasted. He's doing a bit of time wasting.
Is that Gordon Petrich, you mean?
Oh, sorry, I'm getting.
Ivan Golach was the. The coach was the Dundee United, so but he was the manager of Partizan Belgrade that night. Ivan Golac, these are the key things in the game, the connections of Scottish football. Ivan Golac, who later went on to manage Dundee United and famously broke the Dundee United hoodoo of winning the cup. He was the manager. Gordon Petrich was playing for Partizan Belgrade, and the winner in this game, who scored the winner?
Skepovic.
Yeah.
Senior. Mr. Skepovic Senior.
Skepovic Senior scored the winner in the game.
By the way, well, it wasn't the winner, but yeah.
Well, it was the game that knocked us out. It was the goal that knocked us out and won the tie for them.
Did you even see the highlight? This goal? Did you see this goal? Have you watched it, Anthony? No.
Yeah.
What a great goal. It's a brilliant goal. The highlights don't make it clear. But although you read stuff on it and it's like Joe Miller gave the ball away, I'm not sure that's right. I think it was a foul. And the fullback hits a diagonal right to left. The left back, first touch is unbelievable. Absolutely phenomenal touch. Touches it, keeps his pace up, goes past, I think it's Joe Miller, actually. Joe Miller couldn't have given it away. So he gets past Joe Miller. Joe Miller, he's exhausted because he's had a great game. He can't make a decent challenge. He gets a cross into the back post. I don't know who touches the back post, but what a touch. It's a one-touch volley pass back across the goal. So it's like Greg Taylor at the back getting done again, although it was Anton Rowe, just substitute in. Phenomenal touch, and it's a great header. Skefovic is a really good header. And Packie makes a... I say if Packie hadn't touched it, it would have hit off Paul Elliott and come back out. But it's a brilliant goal. And, Celtic get slaughtered for it. But, I mean, it's hard to see, what they could have done. I mean, it's three passes from one end of the pitch to the other. Great header, goal.
Well, we'll start at the beginning, because that's usually a better place to start.
Sorry.
So, any other sort of pop culture references, Anthony, before we go into the game?
No, I'm out.
So the game kicks off. You're in the Rangers end.
Hang on, did I not get my Zaza Gabor? I did my homework.
I was gonna do the return to pop culture half time, and you can tell us Zaza Gabor. So we start the game. You're in the back of the Rangers end. I'm in the middle of the Celtic end. Your dad? Where would your dad be, Anthony?
My gut would say the Rangers end, because the reason I say it, when you were discussing it earlier, the only time I was ever in the Huns end was the Borussia Dortmund game, which was a couple of years later. So obviously that's the Dumfries end of the stadium. So if Dad's trying to drive away quickly, which he would have been.
Quick, get to the A74.
Rangers end. Yeah. So if he was there, possibly. But usually we went to the Celtic end. But like I say, on a night game where there was a quick escape, it might be in the Huns end.
So first half, 7 minutes in, they get a corner kick. It's not new that Celtic can't defend set pieces. corner comes in, and you've got to watch this, because I'm just conscious a guy scored a header. And I've watched it again. The guy basically starts running from way out. The camera's panned back. The guy starts running from way out of picture, just runs straight in, heads the ball into the back of the net. From like 40 yards out, runs, bullet header from the penalty spot, goal.
Yeah, hopeless. And Derek White, he's Christopher Ayer, but 3 inches shorter and not as fast and not as skillful and not as good at defending. He almost causes a goal, the gate right to the corner. But you're right, Harry, that was amazing. Like, it just wasn't like a case of ghosting in or anything. He just walked in. It's hilarious.
I'm going to wait 40 yards out, in the corner, I'm just going to run. I'm just going to bullet this in the back of the net. And then, if St. Anthony's listening to this, there is a guy on the post.
There is a guy on the post. I was about to say that. I am the Mr. Get a Guy on the Post. And yeah, but it's the near post. And to be fair, the guy hits it like a shell. And I don't know if it's Joe Miller or Andy Walker, but it's certainly not one of the tallest. And he doesn't make the most noble effort to get it either, to be honest.
And Pat Bonner just sort of slaps his thighs in anger at everybody else. So we're 1-1, 3-1 down in aggregate. And then we've got a goal from the first of four goals from Jakinowski. Either of you two have any memories that you've watched of that one? It's another set piece.
Well, your boy Patrick gave away a free kick, I think. McStay, actually, it was interesting at the time when I started watching, and I watched the highlight. There's a 3-minute highlight and then there's a 45 minute. So I watched a 3-minute and I was looking at it and I was like, Paul Elliott, the comparisons with Virgil van Dijk. He's a Virgil van Dijk of his age, but if you actually watch the 44 minute highlight, he's nowhere near. But he had a good header at the back post, I think. I mean, free kick came in, he gets up. He was pretty good attacking force, and then Jackie stuck it in. That's what my memory of it.
It's pretty of its time. Free kick, lumped into the diagonal, and headed back across. Jakinowski gets to it like a striker should and buries it. It's a good finish.
Yeah.
So that's 3-2 on aggregate. One each on the night. So, half time. How are you feeling at half time, Lawrence?
Well, it's a decent game. Right? I remember it's a half decent, but it's not like a, you know, it's not like, wow, like lifetime memory stuff. It was a good game. I said, looking back at it, I listened to your show last week, which was really good, actually. We finished fifth, we were a bad team, but looking at it, it was actually quite a good performance. You know, everybody, well, apart from Anton, who was just terrible, by the way, terrible. But there's a reference, Joe Miller played pretty well, Andy Walker was good. I mean, we looked, you know, pretty good, you know. Derek White was obviously terrible. You could see we'd be quite good for a random game. If everybody plays to their potential, we're pretty good. I mean, you could see over the course of a season it'd be a disaster because there's just so many guys whose potential would be terrible on the day. But for that one night, certainly for the first half, we looked pretty decent. 1-1.
It's interesting how many of the same players are playing, you know, that were on last week's show, which is actually, you know, a good 2 years perhaps in between them. There's quite a lot of the same characters. Interesting to see Roy Aiken still there.
Well, he left. He left in the January.
But he's playing in this game.
I know that, yeah.
Yeah.
But the other thing was how many new players were playing in the game. I looked at the summer track. I mean, there was Jakunovski. Who was it? I wrote it down. Mike Galloway, Paul Elliott. Actually, we bought John Hewitt that summer. He didn't play. I didn't even notice if he was on the bench.
No, he wasn't.
Anyways, that's as Gabor. Same for the 27th.
Jazz Gabor story. But getting back to your Milli Vanilli, this was also big news at the time.
It was. Well, I said to Zaza, I said to her.
I'd use a six iron from here, Shasha.
She'd been charged with slapping a policeman, and she took umbrage in the courtroom, and she stormed out the courtroom. So that was... That's how you're right, Anthony. It was a very poor day in history. One of history's poorest days. So the Zaza Gabor got kicked out or ran out of the court.
Obviously, the Cold War is coming to an end here. I'm just putting myself in older fans' shoes. In a game like this where you're playing a team from the Soviet bloc, or at least the communist bloc, not the Soviet bloc, historians, don't get on to me about that, correcting myself. The communist bloc, and you've got an East German referee, would a complaint be, that bloody communist ref helping out these bloody Yugos? Or would people not say that?
I know, because the Yugos were communists that we liked.
Well, they fought with us in the war, didn't they?
Yeah, we liked them.
Half and half.
Oh, well.
We liked them. We liked those communists because you could go on holiday to Yugoslavia as well.
Right.
And they didn't particularly get on with the Soviets.
So the average fan was aware of the Tito Stalin schism.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I didn't even know. Actually, I thought the referee was pretty fair for the whole game. He was. No, I don't think. I mean, what was that whole thing though? Oh, they're coming from, you know, they're stern faced. It was the usual cliche bullshit. But I thought they were a good, pretty decent team as well. I mean, they turned up. Actually, we never mentioned this. They played with two up top. I mean, if you lost, I guess they thought, well, Celtic are pish. We can go there and we can play with two up top. They were very attacking. So they were the opposite of that kind of Eastern European cliche.
Yeah.
You know, quite an attractive, I guess, what you spoke earlier on about the kind of, you know, the Yugoslavian football revolution had even found its way to Partizan Belgrade. The other, hang on, we don't just stop at Zaza Gabor. On this day in history, both the Oakland A's and the San Francisco Giants made their way to the World Baseball Series, which is not terribly important, but that was the Baseball World Series. 3 weeks later, October the 17th, the Luma Parota, whatever it's called, earthquake, where it was a 6.9 on the Richter scale, wrecked San Francisco in the middle of a World Series game. Well worth going on YouTube and looking at that. It's mind-blowing.
This is the second of this series of podcasts where a big Celtic game has preempted a massive earthquake
really?
By 2 weeks. Because we had the Fukushima one the other week.
That's right.
need to look into this. There's a pattern.
Next up, we're going to do when Celtic played in Kiev just after Chernobyl. We're just doing natural disasters created with major Celtic games.
I've got some good stories about that. Anyway, sorry, go on.
But your point about the Celtic team around that time, from Christmas to the end of the season, we played 18 league games and won 2.
Jesus Christ.
That's how bad it was. However, some jolly fellow, if you go on Wikipedia and you look at the league position, some jolly guy has decided to remove Rangers from the league table for season 89-90. So Celtic don't look that bad at the table. We finished 4th, not 5th, when you look at the league table on Wikipedia. You and your mate from Newcastle, you're talking about Zsa Zsa Gabor at halftime, exchanging journalistic stories of how you would write up her slapping the policeman. Yeah. And it's one each, and it's reasonable.
Yeah, well, you think about it, you know, journalists, even then, it must have been chaotic for them. I always think about that. The one I think about is the Manchester United, Bayern Munich Champions League final. I mean, these boys have written their story. It's 89 minutes. Bayern Munich outplayed Man United that night. But obviously played them off the park. So you could think, well, it's safe. I'll just write this. Bayern Munich, Manchester United's dreams lay in ruins last night. Oh, fuck's sake. Somebody's just...
oh, no. Just a minute.
I mean, so this game would have been like that for the guys in the press. I mean, it's just... I mean, talk about heart palpitations. I mean, I've been in that situation myself. I mean, it's horrific. I mean, you think, oh, my God. And it's one of those ones you file it and you hope you never see it again. In fact, I've read guys talking about that game, like Henry Winter or, you know, top football guys. And said, Simon Barnes of the Times, actually, he wrote about that specific game. And he said, and I hoped never to read what I'd written again. Because what happened was you had 750 words. 723 of the words are how Man United got played off the park. And the first sentence is, Man United, that's a sensational triumph, won the Champions League. And then the rest of it's about how shite they were. So this game would have been like that for the reporters. Horrendous.
Well, it would have been because of the order of which the goals went in as well, because it had been backwards and forwards. So straight after halftime, the Pole Jackanowski makes it 2-1. Does anybody have any memory of that one?
Yeah, it's a ball clipped into, I assume it's Andy Walker. He kind of does a lovely little first-time layoff. And is it Galloway? Has a sort of poked effort from a distance. You know, he doesn't catch it brilliantly, but he does it, you know, gets it far enough away from the goalkeeper that he spills it. And just like an absolute, you know, thoroughbred... Jackanowski's in there, slots it away and celebrates with a big smile on his face. He's a really good celebrator. You know, all these goals are really exciting to watch back. You know, he gets really into it, you know.
So shortly after that, and I think it's Derek White, I think it's caught in possession, it goes to, they score again. So it goes to 2-2 on the night. Anybody, any memory of that one?
Yes, Dorofsky. Wearing tracksuit bottoms. Not like, not like, it was the big kind of furry ones, you know, the big, thick, Russell cheap ones, you know, very thick material. Unbelievable.
And my memory of watching this. Me and my brother, like, even maybe highlights later on, just looking at each other as, you know, like a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old, just like kind of confused looking at each other saying, is he wearing trackies? You know, just, can he do that?
And it's not like December, January, February.
No, it's not. But it's, see, the other thing
September.
Is, I was too lazy to go back. But I think he put them on halfway through the game. Because you're watching the highlights, extended highlights, and you don't notice a guy wearing trackie bottoms. But then when he scores, you go, that's the first, he's wearing trackie bottoms. And then you see him later in the game, and he's still wearing trackie bottoms. Anyway, has anybody ever scored? Go on.
He does just look like that older guy that plays fives with you. You know, he just looks so odd.
But he's brilliant, you know?
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
Good.
Yeah. He doesn't even tuck them in his short socks or anything. They're just flapping about like pantaloons or something. It's unbelievable. And we can't stop him scoring.
And you're mentioning Anthony of celebrations, because you know this goal's got a great celebration with the guy who scores it does a forward roll, jumps up, and then like get right fucking up your cymbals to the jungle. So yeah, that's at 51 minutes. That's when things start to kick off, and this is some game. This is starting to be shortly after that. 5 minutes, in fact, after that, anybody want to take me through Jackanowski's hat-trick as Celtic could score a third?
It was a great finish, if I remember rightly. A really good finish. I can't remember the build-up, though, and I watched it this morning. Do you know, watching this, it's so hard to keep track of the score, because in the TV footage, there's no timer and there's no score. So if you go on YouTube and watch it, it's just a blank screen of the game. There's no... I can't believe they would broadcast games and not show that stuff.
It is a lovely goal. There's a good overlap on the right, and a guy sort of falls inside and does sort of spoons one over into the corner. It's, you know, it's a nice move. It looks like a nice bit of football.
It's Galloway.
Right, Galloway, he hits the pass, and then there's a good overlap. And it's not like a sort of Beckham cross running, and the guy just gets enough on it. You know, it's bouncing, so there's a bit
Aiken, I think, that gets it.
Yeah, it's Aiken, right. Yeah. So there's a bit of velocity, and he just pushes it back into the danger zone, which is all you need to do at times. And it just lands at Jackanowski, and he just, you know, he rockets it in. And there's a whole army of like ball boys behind the goal. They go absolutely mental, as you know, everyone else in the stadium. But again, it's great to watch, you know.
My memory of that night, and particularly their three last, the three of their four goals, the same three of their four goals, is my memory of the night of not really being able to work out what system we were playing at the back. And my memory of every one of their goals seems to be scored with us having nobody back, like us chasing back. But, and so that their next goal, which comes 5 minutes later again, is another example of there's nobody there. You know, we're all up the park. The keeper, as you said last week, Anthony, a goal of its time. The keeper grabs the ball and just punts the ball up the park.
Yeah. At that point, it's 2v3 when the number 8 gets it down the left, and he just lines up the Celtic back three. The wee guy in the trackies makes a brilliant run, just onside. And it's just like a video game. Just, you know, you click the triangle for through ball and he's away, and then he's, you know, puts the keeper on his arse, steps by him and just slots it. You know, it's a really composed, you know, it's a masterclass in picking off a team that isn't defending properly. They really were technically very good.
It's a masterclass in the worst offside trap in the world, though. Yeah. I mean, Anton is 5 yards. So the, you know, the, I don't know if it's, I think it's Paul Elliott and Derek
Aiken.
White.
Is it White?
Whoever it is, Anton is 5 yards behind him. I mean, he was terrible. I mean, just terrible. I mean, just headless chicken stuff. So, yeah.
Credit to him. He gets back on the line.
Yeah, well, it's one of those, actually, funny you bring that up. It's one of those ones where you're like, you're mortified. And so you the ball's in the net, and you're making a slide tackle to try and get the ball. I mean, so, you know, I mean, it's performative stuff. It's not real. Yeah. Anyway.
So next up, another. It's only 4 minutes later again. So we've just gone through this spell of 1 minute into the second half, we score, make it 2-1. 5 minutes later, they make it 2-2. 5 minutes later, we make it 3-2. 5 minutes later, they make it 3-3. 4 minutes later, we make it 4-3, and this is the one goal of the night that Celtic scored that's not scored by Jackanowski. It's Andy Walker that scores this one in the 65th minute. You know, Andy Walker, who'd had his fantastic spell during the centenary season, was starting to wane. Fans were obviously getting frustrated at Aitken and Walker, and but he turns up on this one. Anyone want to take me through this goal?
Can't remember it, Anthony.
There's a sort of free kick in the middle. It's pushed down the right. Someone does really well to shield the ball and get into another crossing position again. Blasts it in right. You know, that classic between the defenders and the goalkeeper position, you know, perfect cross, and the Walker just slides in and slots it. And obviously, because of the circumstance, it's a one of those great situations, you know, where someone grabs the ball and, you know, we still need to win this. So yeah, there's a bit of urgency there. As my dad always points out, the team that's then taking centre can take as long as they want to take centre. So it's a completely pointless gesture. But, you know, it looks good. And that's what Andy Walker does.
It's quite a good finish, actually.
Yeah, good goal.
Here, just forget, I mentioned on the, we never mentioned it earlier, I think it's Barry Davis. Is it Barry Davis or John Watson?
No, it's Barry Davis. No, it's Barry Davis. You said Watson earlier, but it's Barry Davis.
Doesn't matter. But he brings up the fact, and it's rare, think about it, it would never happen now. It was hoops against stripes.
The dominant white.
That was a great strip they had. I really liked that. I mean, it was a bit, obviously a bit Juventus again, but it just looked a bit better than the Juventus strip. That was a great finish from Walker. Good. Again, Mike Galloway's. Well, Galloway's involved in the next one, but I won't spoil the.
Well, you take us through the next one, because obviously we're getting excited. We've now scored four. Uh-huh. They've scored three. One more goal and we can do this. But time's eking away. Andy Walker has scored in the 65th minute, and we'd had that burst of a goal every 5 minutes there. So 10, 15 minutes later and the goal hasn't come. And then Jakanovski steps up and the Pole scores against the Yugoslavs and the Scots go wild.
Is that what he said?
So who wants to talk me through this one?
Anthony, you want to do it? You've got better memories.
Yeah, sure. The balls get pushed down the left. And I don't know, who would it have been?
Galloway.
It's a lovely ball in with his left.
Galloway. Galloway.
So was Galloway left-footed or right-footed? You tell me.
Oh, it was hard to tell this night. It was like fucking Zidane. He played like Zidane. It was unbelievable.
But it's a tremendous ball. If that's his weaker foot, you know, he's clearly just said, you know, all or nothing. Put his foot right, threw it right into the danger zone. And it's a lovely near post little flick.
Great.
He just gets there in front of everyone, just slides it. And it's at the Celtic end. And, you know, he's running off into that corner again. And it's just absolutely fantastic.
It's not ironic that Jakanovski goes over and celebrates in front of the advertising hoarding for Polish vodka.
See, that's the kind of detail that you and I would miss, Anthony.
That would become all the more relevant for people who remember Jim White turning up on the doorstep of Jakanovski with a birthday cake. Do you remember that one, Lund?
No, you've lost me there.
So, Jim, I can't remember when it was. Jim White turns up on Jack and knocks, doorsteps Jakanovski for STV's, you know, sports section, doorsteps Jakanovski, who to wish him happy birthday, who patently has had a bit of a baby the night before and has ladies in the house.
Plural.
Really? He was a good looking guy, though, wasn't he? No question.
He was, yeah. This is going to be close to your name dropping thing. Last time I saw Jakanovski, my mate and I had applied to UEFA for cup final tickets, and it was, can't even remember which cup final, UEFA cup final it was now. It was Middlesbrough against somebody, can't remember who, at Feyenoord Stadium. And Jakanovski was giving out presentations, and we're right at the back of the stand, and I'm going, I think that's Jakanovski. So I think he ended up being reasonably senior in UEFA.
I think he was the assistant manager for the Poland national team. I guess once you get into that circuit, you're good to go. Actually, I noticed this, he only scored 10 goals for Celtic in his career.
Really?
Four of them in the one night.
Yeah, but you come to Celtic and you think, I've come to the great Glasgow Celtic. You then play in a game where you score four goals and the arseholes still manage to get themselves knocked out of you. You think, bugger this.
Yeah, you can cruise on that for a while. Because he set up Walker's goal as well.
Yeah.
It was his assist. And he had a couple of good chances as well. Actually, so we're at 5-3, aren't we?
Yeah, we're at 5-3.
I have no idea. Can you remember what you were feeling in the crowd at the time? Were you
I was just elation. I thought we were actually going to go in and score a sixth. That's what I remember thinking.
Well, we should have done. Joe Miller was clean through. He was clean through. And go on.
Right, so I had this conversation with St. Anthony because he had Joe Miller on our podcast. And before he went on, I said, right, St., you need to ask. I loathed Joe Miller for quite some time after this game.
Yes.
Because he's clean through.
Yep.
And if he squares it, yep, Andy Walker has a tap-in from about five, six, seven yards. Because the keeper's, he's sort of coming in on the right-hand side of the box, yep, and the keeper's coming out to him, and Andy Walker's right through the middle, and he goes to school, and I remember at the time thinking, you greedy bastard, you've gone for glory to get the winner yourself to be the guy who seals it at 6-3, instead of just squaring it to Andy Walker. That was my memory. And so St. Aston and Joe Miller had no memory of this.
Aye. It was a crappy effort as well. They chucked it. It was one of those ones. You know, the ball goes through you, you're defending, the ball goes past you, and you're just turning and you see this guy hailing away with the ball, and you're just like, ah, fuck it. You know, we're done. We're losing anyway. It's 5-3. 6 isn't going to make any difference.
What are your recollections of the away support? Was there a big or sizable or anything?
I can't even remember anything. I wouldn't imagine. Oh, I can't imagine there would have been any, to be honest. There would have been a delegation, I would imagine. Yeah, but they would have all been in the main stand. They would have taken
What you would have got in those days would have been the front, as you looked at the main stand from the jungle, bottom left-hand corner of the main stand would have been a tiny wee section of people wearing, you know, sort of beige Max, very 1960s style clothing.
Spies, they were over spying on us.
Exactly.
But that's what it would have been, and these would all have been Communist Party, you know, grandees or whatever, who happened to be Partizan Belgrade fans, you would think. I mean, I don't remember any. It wasn't like the way end, you know, the section. Yeah. That didn't exist. It was just a wide open terrace, I remember, at the time. But that you know, Joe Miller. And that was it done. That was it over.
I'm glad you bring that up because nobody I've spoken to seems to remember that. I remember, as I say, probably well after Joe Miller stopped playing for Celtic, did I forgive him for that? Because he just needed to square it. And he knew Andy Walker was there. It wasn't like he does it and then he realises that, you know, the ball's broken and he could have done it. He's going through. He knows Andy Walker's there. He just needs to square it and it's a goal. And that's us.
Hopeless.
So I don't know when. 81 minutes was when Jakinovski made it 5-3. So I don't know when Joe Miller missed that chance, but Skepovic Senior scores at 88 minutes. And so it's sometime between 81 and 88 minutes, Joe Miller could have just squared it to Andy Walker and that would have been a game over, 6-3, yeah, through in the next round.
Yeah. So cut out that description I gave of their fourth goal. We can cut it out from earlier.
Oh, no, you can redo the description. Of their goal.
Anthony can do it.
Anthony, you described the fourth goal, because the thing that people have got to remember about this as well, at 88 minutes, when they make it 5-4, that's it. Because it's not like nowadays where the fourth official holds up and there's always in a European game 4 or 5 minutes. The whistle would have been blown at 90 and a half. So you knew there was a minute and a half, 2 minutes tops to go. So again, Anthony, talk us through.
Well, it's just a guy going down the left, sort of spoons one over at the back post. You know, he's not aiming at the striker. Or if he is, he overhits it. It goes way beyond the green. But there is a guy back there who does a really smart header right back onto the penalty spot. Paul Elliott's on the line. Paddy Bonner's, you know, ready to dive. But this guy properly gives it everything he's got. You know, I'm sure there's a million of these situations where a guy just powdered it over the bar. But this guy just puts, like, he's diving into it like a sort of video game character. You know, it really is quite an emphatic diving header. It's strong enough to get through Bonner's hands and into the net. And it's proper game over. Up he gets. And, I mean, put yourself in their shoes. What a celebration to have, you know. We've all been there for stuff like that. So, they live it up.
They chucked it. You know, that was the last throw of the dice and all that. I remember when they went almost like just kind of laughing You know, you're absolutely distraught, obviously. But the whole night was just it was like an opera or something. That's what it was, like an opera. It was like an opera, and it was triumph and tragedy, and it was just gripped you. And finally there's comedy. I can't believe we've done this. We've chucked it. We've lost it. How can that happen? It was phenomenal. It was just so when it went in, there was that two, one, you knew it was done. Because that was it, you know, the hero had been, the sword had gone through his heart, he was done, it was over. But it was almost like you were wrung out, but it was kind of funny, you know, it was so tragic, it was almost funny. That's how I felt at the time, even now. I love it. I talk about it all the time. I love that game.
The thing about, we talked in the last podcast about Murder McLeod making a comment that Billy McNeil had never once talked about the opponents the whole time he'd had him as a manager, you know, because that type of thing, and he got a shock of his life when he went to Germany. The big thing I remember at the game, and I remember at the time, I was working in a really old spit and sawdust drinking man's pub called the Lawn Bar at St. Enoch Square, really old. Oh. And even then, I remember the customers in that night, "Oh, Brian, what about last night?" I know. I mean, and every one of them, I can remember to this day, remember Guy John Jackson, Flat Cap, whatever. "Why didn't he bring on Andy Lynch?" was this guy's comment. Of course, it wasn't Andy Lynch. He was meeting Tommy Burns. Burns had been getting criticised for being past it and slow, and he slowed the play down too much. And he'd been moved back from midfield, and Billy McNeil had been playing him at left back because he was so ponderous. At this stage in his career, and everybody knew that that we should have then 81 minutes we go to 5-3 and we're through. The thing to do is make a substitution. He didn't make the substitution. He didn't make any change to the system. He didn't bring on Tommy Burns. That was the one thing he should have brought on Tommy Burns and showed it up, and he didn't. Getting back to the Murder McLeod thing. That tactical side of things didn't seem to enter into it.
You think he would have said, "Keep an eye on the guy with the tracky bombs." I've got a real wizard in tracky bombs.
I know, that's the thing. It's not like, you know, they were all dark-haired wearing black and white stripes. It was easier to identify this one guy who was their star man. Guy with tracky bombs.
But you're talking about we're talking about the tactical naivety. The idea that we had Andy Walker and Joe Miller on a break. What are we doing? We should be playing with it at the back, you know, bringing on four substitutes, whatever, and just not even, you know, be entirely passive. Two banks of five, and, you know, they're done anyway because their morale has been totally crushed. They're physically exhausted, and they're not going to, you know, they're not going to be able to rouse themselves against two banks of five, especially without time wasting.
Our defence, our substitutes bench rather, because at the time you were allowed a three player. I think it was five players you were allowed in Europe on the bench. We had Andrews, Fulton, Burns, Coyne, McCahill on the bench. So we had Burns, who was playing left back at that point, also midfielder. Fulton, midfielder. McCahill, defender. Obviously, goalkeeper doesn't count in a striker. On the bench in Coyne. See, you know, in the modern world, you'd have taken off one of Joe Miller, Andy Walker, and Jack Anofsky.
Totally.
And put a defender on. No, none of that. Just keep playing. Keep going, lads.
You know the expression that not the view always used, the sieve for the defence? Yeah. Is this the era where that is like embryonic or before? People start referring to our defence as the sieve?
Our defence was crap most of my life as a Celtic supporter, right up until modern era when tactics came in. But back in those days, it was, yes, but we're Celtic, so we play attacking football, so we just don't think about defending. So that's why we signed Tom McAdam from Dundee United as a replacement for Kenny Dalglish, and he then becomes a centre-half for four seasons. You know, someone like Roddy McDonald, no harm to him, but a very average defender. Paul Elliott and Mick McCarthy, who'd followed each other, were probably the two best centre-halves we'd had for 15 years.
Elliot was a standout. I'm not sure he's a standout looking back.
No, in his first season he wasn't, because you remember he got sent off in his first game to Aberdeen in a time when people didn't get sent. His first season wasn't so great, because I always remember one of my mates saying, isn't it funny how the insertion of a first name changes it? That in his first season, people just shouted Elliot, and in his second season, people called him Paul Elliot, because they liked him. Whereas his first season, he wasn't so... his first season, he seemed to be all over the place. It was his second season, he was Van Dijk-esque.
Aye. Well, my memory of him was just, he was a good guy as well. You know, he was a sophisticated defender. You know, he was decent on the ball. Actually, in this commentary in this game, Barry Davis goes on about how much better his use of the ball is than it was in his Aston Villa days or whatever. Yeah, but you are right. It was, we're Celtic. We don't bother with that defending stuff. No point in all that stuff. It's just terrible, though. I mean, Derek White, Jesus Christ. Anton Rogan, my God. Just awful.
Terrible. This is true. I was, what's that main bus artery heading south out of Glasgow City Centre? The one next to the train station.
M77, you talk about?
Oh, the bus.
What, the bus number?
The main bus artery, the street, the road that's heading south.
Oh, you've got Jamaica Union Street and then Jamaica Street.
Yeah, this isn't. I've built this up. I walked past Derek White there once.
I've got a Derek. Man. Well, I've got my Derek White stories. I walked past him on Great Western Road one day, and he looked phenomenal. Yeah. Like, big, tall, bronzed, handsome fella. He ended up in Dubai doing TV commentary, I think.
That was my guess. Yeah, that tan, for that time of year, was not right at all.
You've given me a great idea for a new podcast series. Famous Celtic players you walked past.
Be better than this, that's for sure.
So 5-4, that's it. Game over. Game's a bogey. A minute and a half to go. We're out. So what's your memory then with your Newcastle colleague from that point on? You remember the drive you nearly crashed. So tell us.
It was just disbelief. I mean, I was obviously disappointed and all that, but he was just a football fan. It was hard not to get swept along in that. Like, he couldn't believe it. You know, it's just like he'd seen Marilyn Monroe naked or something. He was just beside himself. And so it was hard not to get... I remember this bit, that was my immediate, I've gone to Celtic games, like, I remember going to Rapid Vienna, and all, you know, games that were disappointing, you know, you lost, but there was a genuine gut punch. This didn't feel like that, you know, it was just a bit different. It was like it'd been a gift from God or something. And there was that aspect of it. And also, I'd taken my... Also, I was a little bit older. You know, it wasn't like when I was in my, you know, going to the uni support or whatever, you know, we were mad, you know, really mad for it. So you're a little bit older, so you kind of, okay, well, greater things, worse things happen at sea. There's a bit of that. There's a bit of, you know, it was like a gift. And there was a bit of him being so excited about it. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't devastated, I must admit.
It was a real topsy-turvy spell in the season. Prior to that, we'd drawn three games. Then after that, we win three games. Then we lose three games. Then draw two games, win four games, and then that's it. The only thing that then happens is we have the famous, at the end of that season, we had the famous Scottish Cup final against Aberdeen, where we lost on penalties, with everybody taking a penalty in that one. I think it's Anton that misses the final penalty.
Oh, I can't remember. I can't even remember any of that.
So that was that season. And that game, as I say, it took a long time to get excited. I found it very difficult to get excited about a Celtic game for quite some time after that game.
After that?
Uh-huh.
You're obviously a better Celtic fan than I am. I'm just a more worldly... bigger, more philosophical kind of gentleman, you know.
So what happened with your career? Oh, by the way, so it was you did like the John Lennon of local negotiations. You know, when John Lennon walks in and says, "This band's got to break up," you know.
It wasn't me. That was Lloyd. I well remember the conversation. He was shitting himself. He was shaking. He was so nervous. I want to go and do this. All right, on you go. But I was already making plans by then, you know, so. But all pals now, though. I mean, we're always chatting Lloyd now. I hope I'm not giving anything away. He's on Strava now. He's excited about cycling. All he ever does is seems to be cycling. He looks great. He's 60 years old this year.
He's just turned 60. Yeah.
Looks phenomenal. He's in great shape, so I'm really, and we're good pals.
When are you reforming to play the bandstand?
Next year. There you go. Next summer. So we're all signed up. I would keep on looking at the... this is terrible, isn't it? You keep on looking at these... the water boys are wandering around Europe every summer, hoovering up cash. You know, playing all these festivals. You know, 14th on the bill. Some festival in Belgium. You know, and I said to the boys, I was going on to them, let's go and, you know, make a bit of cash. Be quite good fun, spend a summer. So that's what we're doing next year, summer.
2022?
2022. We would have done it this year, but
yeah,
you know, you don't know what's happening. So, Anthony, you can. I'll get you on the guest list. Sorry, Brian. Kind of busy. Right.
Make sure you do the Pahoda Festival.
I've got it here. I don't know, is that the big one?
That's the one. I've never been to it, but it is the big one. It's an event as they've got.
Well, we'll be on the fourth stage, probably third on the bill on the fourth stage. But
it'll be that gig that the 14 people turn up at.
But the money's still the same. Still spend the money.
Just to give you a window into Central Eastern Europe, the biggest posters I've seen for Western acts have been, you know, the guy from the Police Academy movies that does the noises.
Oh, that guy!
He's big. He went viral last week, so that was odd.
He did a whole lot of love. It was amazing.
There you go. He comes to Slovakia once every couple of years.
Get him the tickets. Get lots of tickets.
The other one is David Icke.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah, great. That's the market over here.
I could just see us going into the, what was it called, the festival?
Pahoda.
But walking in with our manager and saying to the manager, I told you, local commotions and noise guy, not noise guy and local.
So would you have been staying up late that night for your dad coming back down the road to Dumfries, Anthony?
I don't think so. The funny thing looking back, because I feel at times in my childhood I was denied certain things and I've got a bit of a chip on my shoulder because of it. But watching this, every ball boy tracksuit, jacket, the kit the team are wearing, your shorts, socks, shirt, I had everything. I had all that stuff. Everything I see on this video, I owned. So maybe I wasn't as hard done to as I remember.
Actually, I made a note, sorry. It's a horrible strip. And you know the worst thing about it is the shorts. The shorts are like satin. They're like silver pantomime shorts or something. They're horrific.
Anyway. Oh, I made them look good.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
Well, with that bombshell and with the exclusive bombshell that Lloyd Cole and the Commotions are reforming for a summer tour in 2022, I will say...
They do.
Lance and Anthony, thanks very much.
Yep.
Such fantastic memories there for those of us of a certain age and certain era of an incredible game. That we were out of Europe, but wow, it was utterly amazing in a period of utter barrenness. Anyway, enough of that. Next, we record these on Monday night, so the next podcast is not going to be a game podcast. It's a very special guest on Wednesday. Next Monday's Easter Monday, so probably not do one then. So I need to line up. I've got a number of people lined up for various games, so we'll be along soon with another episode of the game. That was me, Harry Brady, with Anthony Murray and Lawrence Donegan. Yeah.